step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with our weekly look at the world of non-league football. It's the business end of the season, and the next few weeks hold the key to the potential champions and promotion winners this season. First up, old friend of the show, Hakan Hayrettin. His Mason United side are now 13 unbeaten in the National South and second in the league. Now they face a week featuring games against third and first. He tells us why he's treating them just like any other game. Atop of the Isthmian Premier League, a Worthing FC, and we talk to George Dowell about realising his five-year plan, COVID stretched, of course, and also his side's run of games against second, third and fourth place sides in the coming weeks. And we love a story that celebrates the magic of non-leagues on this show, so our third guest just does that. She's formerly worn the Newport County Spitty the Dog mascot costume in their non-league days, and now she's introducing a new club mascot at Ashford United down in Kent. Not just introducing the new mascot, but Ash the Tree is a creation of an 11-year-old local girl who won a competition to design the new mascot, and the costume itself was even made by a local firm. Marketing executive at the club, Faye Hackwell, tells us more. Rounding off the show, it's the return of the non-league paper editor-at-large Matt Badcock with his insight on the National League managerial changes and what's ahead in this weekend's non-league paper. Plenty to come, so sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's start with a side in fantastic form, 13 games unbeaten in the National South going into perhaps the biggest week of the year. They sit second in the table and on Saturday host third place Oxford City. And in many ways, that's just a precursor with next weekend's trip won to league leaders Dorking Wanderers. It's water off a duck's back for an experienced manager, though, and our next man is no stranger to being a manager and no stranger to being on this show. So it's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to manager at Maidstone United, Hakan Hayrettin. Welcome, Hakan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Hakan. Now, again, we're both juggling a million and one things, but you've got a big weekend ahead. Do you do anything different for games like this, that you know, these two biggest games probably of the season for you?
Not really. We still prepare the same way. We still have our debrief of the week before on a Thursday. We'll have a look at things on a Friday, talk about the opposition. You know, we've done our due diligence. We know what they're all about and what they bring to the table. And it should be an interesting week ahead. So, really looking forward to it. For me, nothing changes. The preparation for me and Terry Harris and the staff is all the same. You know, we make sure we cross the T's and dot the I's, make sure we've got everything covered. And we're looking forward to, hopefully, a good week for us.
And I'm looking at that table, it shows the strength and the quality in National League South this year, because you're one game behind Dorking, so you've got game in hand, 3 points behind them, so you could catch them up. Only four goals difference on the goal difference there. But I say you've got Oxford City this weekend. You've then got Dartford there on the same points as Oxford. Ebbsfleet just 3 points behind them. Dulwich just 4 points behind it. There isn't going to be an easy game at any point during this season.
No, I've said this and I've said it all along. This is, and I, you know, in my time of coaching and managing, this is probably the hardest league I've been involved in terms of quality in the last 10 years. And, you know, I've worked at Luton Town in the Football League and Dagenham in the Football League, and I've managed in the Conference. So I would say that this is probably the toughest league I've been involved in for about 10 years, and that shows the strength and depth that most of the teams have got. I believe it's a filtering process, obviously with the influx of foreign players that come in, there's a filtering process which obviously filters down to us. You know, I would probably say the top four or five teams at our level, maybe even more, could compete in the one above. So, no, it's a good advert for the National League. I think there's some very good teams, and Oxford have done an unbelievable job since David Oldfield decided to move on to pastures new. And the boys at the helm have steadied the ship and done a remarkable job. You know, we played Eastbourne last week, who were fourth in the form guide. Oxford are up there as well. So it's all nip and tuck. It's going to be close. But, you know, for me, nothing changes. Steady, level-headed, focused on one game at a time. And we look forward to the game against Oxford City, which will be a good game.
I have always thought that I'd want you on my team if ever I was on a game show, because I've never... I think in the olden days, maybe you might have, you'd lose your rag, but you always seem so calm and just sort of, is that because you're organised and you've already planned it out?
Yeah, do you know what it is? I've learned, I'm still learning, and before the passion used to get the better of me, and but now it's all about being focused and making sure how I'm going to outwit the opposition's manager when I need to. And there have been times when I've needed to act quickly. And I say this, and I'll say it again, I'm very, very fortunate and lucky. I've probably got the best number two around in Terry Harris, who's a personal friend of mine. I've worked with him at two clubs previously, and we get on really well. So with the experience and the knowledge that we've got, we stay calm as long as we can. I mean, the last 10 minutes of the game against Eastbourne was a bit nervy. But the majority of the time, you know, we try and look at the bigger picture and stay as positive as we can. And I've learnt that over the years, before I even used to take it home, so that's long gone now for me. But no, listen, the experience aspect of it plays a big part in that now. So, you know, I know what to expect and I know when to expect it. I just got to deal with it.
Well, you don't want to be taking it home, because I found that that's probably more expensive than the FA fine that you'd get if you've left it on the field, because then you take it home anyway. You still get the grief.
Yeah, I get a phone call. Did we win? I said, yeah, good. Did we lose? I don't, you know, she keeps quiet for an hour, but I go in and I'm bubbling. But no, I think from my personal point of view, I think I'm nearly 700 games in as a manager, and plus many, many more as an assistant manager and coach at levels around here and above and in the Football League. So I know what to expect. I'm reasonably qualified in that department now to keep everybody level-headed and focused.
And talking about keeping everybody level-headed and focused, a great time to have your captain, George Elokobi, back after, 4 months out, I think, with a groin injury?
Three months out, yeah. George has been someone who I've got a lot of admiration for. At the tender age of 36, he still looks like he's 21. He looks after himself. He's been very, very influential in the changing room, even though he's not been playing. And he's been a massive influence to me on and off the pitch. And he's kept everybody focused on the job at hand. You know, we have an ethos, or I have an ethos. It's one game at a time. I have an ethos. You'd have to be in the best players, have to be in the best team. You've got to be in the winning team. And George has been a big factor of that, even though he's been injured. He's kept everyone focused and ready for the games ahead, you know.
And I guess then that's where you your management skills come in extra handy as well, because you've got a winning team there. You've got a centre-back pairing that you don't want to be breaking up, but you've got one of the best centre-backs in the division that's now fit and able on the bench.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, George knows the rules. George, he's not a silly man. You know, he's played his first full 90 minutes against Tunbridge in the Kent Senior Cup, and I think he needs a few more of them. He's a wily old fox and he knows the rules. We've got a good pairing at the back. Long may that continue. You know, when we were in adversity, when we had some injuries and suspensions, I was allowed to bring George Fowler in, who's done ever so well for us. And then we got Joe Law back as well after a long absence from injury. And the partnership has just taken off and kicked off from there. And they've done well together. And I'm sure when and if George is called upon, he won't let anybody down. He'll be the player and the professional, the perfect professional that I know that he will be.
Yeah, and so you've got a great set of people on and off the field there. But it's also it's a great setup at Maidstone. The Gallagher Stadium, I mean, it's much different from Waltham Forest when you first started in management, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my first actual job was at Watford doing the under-18s, but obviously my first, and then it was Harrow Borough, and then Waltham Forest as a manager. But, yeah, you know, with a job like this, at this level, there's extra pressure. You know, the club have got a fantastic support base. They expect to win. You know, we're averaging 3,000 supporters, and with that, if you don't win, they'll let you know. And we had a sticky period a little while back where we weren't winning, but I wasn't fazed. Because I had so many injuries and suspensions and in key areas at key times of the season where I think we went 7 games where we couldn't get a win. And but I wasn't fazed by it because I knew once when everyone was fit and raring to go, we'd have a good, strong foundation to work off. And that's what we've done. We stuck to our guns. We stuck to our beliefs and the way we want to do things. And it's been good so far, touch wood.
Yeah, and I know you're one of those managers that likes to get out to as many matches as possible. Yeah, whatever the level, whatever the competition, and you get to see what other clubs have on and off the field. Does that give you other ideas to go back to the board to talk about? Yeah, you know, how you can further tweak things.
Yeah, I'm blessed at the moment because things are going well. So, you know, only today I had that conversation with the owner that I may want to bring one in. He's let me bring in Mo Bettimer from Aldershot. He's let me bring in Jamal Chikwanda from Watford, which is fantastic. And there may be one more coming in. But I'm always looking. You know, when you do this job, you've got to have your eyes and ears widely open. You've got to have your wits about you. You've got to know who's on form and who's not. And we're talking about all areas now. So the levels below and the levels above, you know, you've got to have your ear to the ground. And we get out to games every week when we're not... We're not, you know, involved in any games ourselves. So, yeah, we have that opportunity at our disposal, and I'm sure in the coming weeks things will open up and we'll see where we are. But, yeah, the answer to your question is yes. You know, we do get out to games, and yes, we can recruit and we can tweak if needed.
When you are out and about and watching a game, do you watch it in a different way, or is your coach's head always on analysing, even if it's not your side that's in action?
For sure. You know, we obviously sometimes we go and watch a player or we go and watch a team. I mean, for me, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to watch a player. But at the same time, I'm having a look at the team that's playing. Like, for instance, a little while back, I went to see Hayes v. Dawkins way back a few months back. And, you know, I thought Hayes were a hell of a side and Dawkins are too. But Hayes on the night just had that little bit of more intelligence, a little bit more pace and power in their team. They move the ball a bit quicker. You had the lad from Oxford on loan there. He done ever so well. And I keep my ear to the ground and see. And I was very, very impressed with Hayes. And I'm thinking, if they come up, you know, they're going to be a good acquisition. But at the same time, I was looking at a player and I was looking at the way Dawkins played. So, yeah, you got to cover all angles, haven't you? And you've got to have people out there doing the job for you.
So I'm guessing you're not the sort of person that you have to ask, or that you should ask, about whether he's watched the latest box set on Netflix. You probably don't get... So you probably just get home, shut your eyes, and that's you done.
You know what? I try not to watch as much football at home, and I have this discussion with Terry Harris. Terry's a football geek, you know. Every day, every night, he's watching football. Before I get in and I've got a half hour, I'm going to watch a wildlife programme or a documentary to try and switch off, to try and generate my brain in other areas. But, you know, the combination works well. Yeah, I don't watch a lot of Netflix and I haven't got time, but, you know, if I didn't enjoy the job that I do, I wouldn't do it. And if I wasn't good at it, the reason may be because I don't get out and watch enough games and analyse bits and pieces. So, but I'm lucky because I've got a good backroom staff. You know, everyone's working tirelessly hard to make sure we get all areas covered and we all push each other and sort of influence each other to do better.
It's always a pleasure to get you on, Hakan. And now something in my mind's going that maybe there's a future non-league documentary about the wildlife over the walls from when those ball collectors disappear. I could get you doing some narration or something over the top of it.
A lot of walls out there, let me tell you.
Hakan, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck for the coming weeks, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much. Really good to talk. Thank you.
So let's chat with a side doing well. Well, really well. They're flying at the top of the Isthmian League. And let's get a slightly different take on what it's like to be up the top of one of these Step 3 divisions with eyes on Step 2 promotion. This is a one of an owner. And as fans of our clubs, we know about the highs and lows and how success and failure on the pitch can impact on you. But what about if, on top of all that, this was your little baby as well? It's a few years since we last spoke to my next guest, but his own unique story is on the edge of another twist. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, owner at Worthing FC, Mr. George Dow. Welcome, George.
Hello, how you doing? You all right?
Good. Now, I don't want to dwell on it, but for those that may not remember or know, you were a very promising footballer, but at the age of 17, you were in an accident that left you paralysed from the chest down, and wanting to put your compensation money effectively to good use, you basically bought the club when it was at risk of disappearing. And at the age of 21, I think that's probably when we first spoke to you on this show, you became the youngest football club chairman in the country. But that was way back in 2014-2015 season, in a club with 129 years of history before you came in. Even since then, it's been a busy old time. Do you regret any of it?
No, I don't regret any of it. Obviously, there's been some moments where I thought, oh, what have I got myself into, and things that I wasn't necessarily expecting coming into being a chairman or an owner, as previously I've just been a fan and a player. So there's a lot that happens behind the scenes I weren't expecting, but no, I certainly haven't regretted it. It's been a great journey so far.
And did you think, you say you weren't aware as a player, and I'm constantly saying that to our players, and to be fair, probably a few people on the board as well, but there is so much that makes up a football club, isn't there? And I don't think, even if people spent a whole week with people that run football clubs, they still wouldn't see every element and every bit that needs to be addressed and dealt with on a daily and a weekly basis.
No, yeah, I think you could spend a lifetime down there and always find something new that has to happen to enable a game to kick off at 3 o'clock on an afternoon. I think obviously fans and stuff, they turn up at 2:45 and leave at 5 o'clock or whatever, and they think, oh, that's it. But yeah, there's a lot of really good people and normally volunteers during the week, that especially in non-league, that keep it ticking and make sure that these games are able to go ahead. Yeah, so much that goes on that certainly I wasn't expecting.
And you previously already started another club down the pyramid. Was that experience vital in being able, enabling you to help the Worthing FC move forward so quickly as it has?
I started the team when I came out of hospital, just a group of friends really. We just started at the bottom of the pyramid called Worthing Borough, and that definitely did help me to understand some of what goes on at Worthing. Obviously, there's more to it, but in terms of like the forms and stuff that need filling out before a game, and then the forms that you have to send off after a game, and almost like the secretarial role during the week of things that need to be done if you're signing players and all that sort of stuff. They obviously, all the way down the pyramid, you have to do it as well. But the higher up you go, obviously, the more, I guess, stringent some of them rules are and some of that paperwork is. But yeah, no, it definitely gave me a good insight to what to expect. And in terms of the footballing paperwork, yeah.
And I'm guessing, like me, that the secretarial role is not one that you're ever going to put your hand up and offer to do.
No, admin is not my strong suit, I have to admit, straight away. No, it's not. We've got a good guy, Bass, who does that for us.
Obviously, when you first came up with the idea of helping the club, did you have any plan in your head as to where you wanted the club to get to?
Yeah, well, when I first came in, me and a guy called Calvin, who was at the club at the time and was a big part of, why I got involved, but a big part of helping me to get a meeting with the board and put my idea to them. We kind of had a 5-year plan that we wanted to try and get the club promoted twice in 5 years. And then we had the 3G pitch going down and trying to bring in the community and widen our outreach, as it were, into the community and get more people coming down there. So that was our plan. That was our vision of where we wanted to get to. And we kind of managed to get our first promotion in the first year. And then we were on to get our second promotion in the fifth year, but it got obviously null and voided because of COVID.
So actually, in terms of, I said you were the youngest chairman, but in terms of chairman and sticking down, what their plan is, you've pretty much achieved probably more than anybody, most of the other chairmen that I speak on this show week in, week out.
Yeah, well, I'd say I'm not the actual chairman anymore.
Yeah,
Barry Hunter, who is now, and he's doing a really good job, and he's improved us off the pitch massively in the 18 months to 2 years that he's been involved. But in terms of our plan, this is our, if we complete this season and nothing else happens, this will be our fifth completed season. So I take that as a win, and that we got our two promotions in 5 years.
I was going to come on to Barry Hunter, but having the chairman role now, because you're still the owner, but you've handed that over. Is that simply because you've got other things on away from the club, or is it all about building your team and getting the right people in the right places?
Yeah, it's about building the team, I think. Like when I first got involved, we had a very small team of people that would help out on a match day and during the week. And we just needed to, in terms of like growth, like we started off with maybe 250 to 300 people. And now we're getting regularly over in and around 1500 people again. And obviously the operation that goes in behind that has to be better, and we needed more people. And at the time, like I said earlier, admin and stuff maybe isn't my strong suit. And I felt like if I could just focus on, I do a lot of like the marketing and the social media stuff, which is what I prefer to do. And then and Barry's experience, he had a long time at Loxwood, and his professional experience, he's like the perfect man for the job as a chairman. And he's since proved that with all that he's achieved at the club so far.
Yeah, and it is one of those clubs that, you know, people like myself involved in another club do look on admiringly at. Not when you beat us in the FA Cup earlier this year, but you know, you were far the better side on the field and did what you needed to do. But the community's always been key for you, and you've got some exciting initiatives in place, and they're all thriving. The 3G has brought about remarkable turnaround in the fortunes of the club as a business too. But obviously that didn't come without its own problems too.
Yeah, the 3G pitch was a big part of my plan initially. I wanted to build a 3G pitch and make a community football centre for anyone that played football could use it. And it's just meant that we can now open 7 days a week. We have different community clubs using the pitch, and it's opened our doors, as it were, to the whole community, and everyone can use it. And then they can maybe use the facilities on a Wednesday night, and then they go, oh, we've got a game Saturday. And then could they come down and watch it? All that sort of stuff that feeds into that. But yeah, that did have its own problems because our original contractors maybe, I don't know, what, yeah, maybe messed up in a few areas.
Yeah, I think we spoke to you on this show about that. There were a few issues where it didn't work as it should have, should it really, as a 3G?
Yeah, but it wasn't as smooth sailing as it could and should have been. But and Barry has been instrumental in changing that around for us and getting backing from FIFA and stuff to help us put that right. So, yeah, the pitch now is probably one of the better ones, certainly we've visited.
And I like what you said there, that it's about, you know, maybe lads coming in midweek, playing a game on there and then thinking, oh, the game on Saturday will come along. And that, so often when you hear people talking about, oh, we must get a 3G pitch because we can have, you know, five games a week and earn revenue that way, which is great if you want to be a venue for other people to play football at. But you're building a football club, and you've built a football club based around that 3G. So you're using the 3G as your marketing tool.
Yeah. Well, exactly that. It's enabled us to have youth teams down there and community clubs down there, walking football, all sorts of things that we do down there now. And all these people are probably maybe had never been to the club before. They come down, experience the facilities and maybe like what they see in the bar, and they think, oh yeah, I'd like to come back here. What else goes on here? And then, yeah, well, we've got a game Saturday, or we've got a quiz night coming up, or whatever we've got going on. They can see it all there. They've been to the facility. They know what it's like. They know what to expect. And then they come back hopefully to a game and enjoy the atmosphere, and then they keep coming. That's always been the plan. And certainly in the first 5, 6, 7 years that I've been involved, it certainly seems to be working year on year because our crowds are going up. And I think it helps that our manager and players are doing a great job on the pitch, but I think what we're doing off the pitch is a big, big part of that as well.
Yeah, and after those the disappointment of the aborted seasons, what are you now? 12 games to go, 6 points clear at the top of the Isthmian Premier, a game in hand, and you go to second place Bishop Stortford on Saturday. Are you getting excited now at what the next chapter may hold?
I don't know if I'm getting excited because, it's certainly as a club, I can say we're planning. Maybe if it's this year or not, we as a club want to make that next step into the National League. So we're planning off the pitch for it. Whether that happens this year or not, I don't want to apply any pressure to Adam and the players. Obviously, I hope it does. And it is an exciting time. We've got 12, like you say, 12 games to go. We're in a really strong position. We've got three really tough games coming up, though. We've got Bishopsthorpe, then we've got Enfield, and then Lewis away. So three of the top. All in the top four.
It's the top four all playing each other, which is an amazing feat at this time of year.
If we can get through into the middle of March and we've taken, I don't know, 6 or 7 points from these games, obviously we want to win them all, but even if we take 6 or 7 points from them 3 games, we're in a really, really strong position and hopefully, leave us with 9 games left to go and hopefully it will be a really strong position and ours to lose, as it were.
Yeah, and you mentioned the management team. You've mentioned Barry, other people around you. That is it this time of the season where you've got tough games like that week in, week out, that where the management team and the squad and also those people off the field really come into their own, because you're asking a lot of people really to get the maximum out of them at a peak time.
I don't know. I think it depends on the kind of season you're having, because obviously so far, touch wood, we've had a pretty good season. We're obviously doing well. I think a lot of people are excited and they want to help. They want to be a part of the journey and push it on. I think maybe a few years back when we first got promoted into this league and we started quite slowly and it was tough. And then I really feel like everyone pulls together, all the people that all the volunteers that help out, you really, really, really appreciate what they're doing, because you know what I mean, it's not always enjoyable when you're traveling God knows where on a Tuesday night and it's freezing and then you lose 4-0 and then you've got to come back and then they're there again Saturday to help you again. But I just think all the volunteers, regardless of what's going on, I think they're all brilliant, and what they do is invaluable, really. And clubs like ours and many non-league clubs wouldn't be able to function without them. So, definitely it breeds its own little community within the club that it's almost like a little family.
Yeah, and you took over, I think the club was, £200,000 in debt when you took over there. You've transformed the facilities, the people behind the scenes as well, the community off the field, that's all back and sort of thriving as far as I can see. Can the club sustain itself at the next level? You say you're putting plans in place. More and more Step 2 clubs are effectively running as full-time professional outfits. It is that next level sustainable for a club like Worthing?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think so. What we're doing off the pitch, and when I say planning, I mean in terms of like ground grading and stuff like that, and making sure that we're compliant with the league above. And obviously, we would hate to be in a position where we gain promotion on the pitch, but off the pitch, we weren't able to access it because we haven't got the right facility. So we're definitely planning in terms of that and planning our we're not necessarily planning our budgets just yet around it, but I'd like to think we, even with the team we've got and the budget that we have, we can compete at the level above. The teams we've played from the level above, we've looked good in the games and we haven't struggled. I mean, where that leaves us in terms of a league position, I don't know, but we'd look to push on, and I think we'd be sustainable in the league above, and what we're doing off the pitch is improving all the time, so hopefully we can keep driving revenue and be competitive in the league above.
And how far can Worthing FC go?
I tell a lot of people ask me this, and I don't know. I don't actually know. There wouldn't be any point or any league that we got to where we go, okay, let's just stop, let's consolidate. I think everyone involved from the committee up, even managers, players, everyone's ambitious at the club. And as a committee, we definitely want to keep driving Worthing Football Club forward. And I don't see it in the people that we've got on board to go, okay, we've got to this level now, let's consolidate here and just stop what we're doing. I think we'd always just keep pushing. And if that meant that we had to, I don't know, improve the facilities further, or I don't know, find different facilities somewhere. If we got, I don't know, it's crazy talk, but if we got like League Two football at any point, do you know what I mean? If we had to find new facilities I think we'd always try and find a solution to keep progressing. I don't think there's any ceiling, as it were.
I think that otherwise we wouldn't keep doing it every week in, week out.
What's the point if you just want to sit still? Yeah.
Well, George, always fantastic to get you on the show. Thanks for giving us some time and talking to us. Best of luck for the rest of the season. Yeah, hopefully we'll get you back on the Non-League Football Show very soon.
Yeah, cool. Thank you for having me.
Now, we like to run stories about the magic of Non-League, and every now and then there's something a little different that comes along. As all the message boards are alive with the apparent uprising crowds across non-league clubs, some of that may be down to the fact that clubs are doing much more to try and attract people through the doors. This week, we learnt of three new mascots operating in the Isthmian League. Chessant revealed Amber the Lion on their trip to Stockport County in the FA Trophy last weekend. And Bedfont Sports have unveiled Eddie the Eagle, who hopefully won't be too much of a menace for neighbouring Heathrow Airport. But the other one had a special little twist, and I thought that worthy of a chat. So let's welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Faye Hackwell, Marketing and Communications Executive at Ashford United. Welcome, Faye.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good to get you on, Faye. And I said your mascot tale, it's got a slightly different twist. So tell us about Ash the Tree and how he came about.
Well, the club hadn't had a mascot for quite a few years, and we wanted a way of spreading the word around Ashford about the club, a way of engaging new people, and also we wanted something that would improve our match day experience. I've got young children myself, and I know when I bring them to football, it's not all about the 90 minutes of action on the pitch. It's got to be the banter you have with the stewards, it's got to be is there some decent food, and all that extra match day entertainment that really helps. So whether it's child mascots or crossbar challenge, something like that, I think it all adds to our overall memories of the day. So I thought a mascot would be a really good idea. And the best way to tell everyone about what we were doing was to hold a competition. So we made a video that told a little bit about the history of the club and the surrounding area of Ashford. And we sent it out to all the schools to show in their assemblies or to send home in the newsletter for parents to do with the children. And then there was a worksheet where the children had to draw their mascot, give it a name and tell us why it was a good mascot for our club. And we had about 300 entries, which was really good. And amazingly imaginative ideas. Some of them, there was no way they could be made into a costume. Some of them were pretty petrifying and would not have engaged children. And some of them were absolutely amazing. So we then got a panel of judges together from the club and we sat down and had loads of fun going through them. And eventually Ash the Tree came out as the winner.
And Ash the Tree as well, an impressive debut in the Isthmian South East Division on Saturday, inspiring a 4-0 win. But it's one of those things that in non-league, I'm a fan, you're a fan, but fans of non-league, we tend to be impatient. And this has taken a number of months, hasn't it, to get this far?
Yeah, it has actually. Yeah, we had the idea at the beginning of the season and then October, November, when the schools were all putting their entries in. And then we had a wonderful costume maker from Mimix Productions who came on the panel of judges because we wanted to make sure it was something she could physically make into a costume. And she gave us a bit of advice on what would work. And then it took her a couple of months to get all the materials and get it together. And he arrived beginning of February. So we did a lovely launch at the winner's school where we got the press along. And then Ash made his big debut at the match against Sevenoaks, which was wonderful because he was there dancing on the halfway line just as the team were about to kick off. And it was one of our most convincing performances of the season.
So already quite a celebrity. And I think Ash the Tree's got his own social media accounts as well. I mean, it's bookings for other community events and all first team home fixtures. This is sort of, again, a long-term plan for the club to develop this community engagement.
Yeah, definitely. He's going to be there at, all kind of fates, all these sorts of things. At the moment, he's going around all the schools that entered and handing out runner-up certificates and family tickets to loads of the children that took part. So hopefully that's bringing a load of new people into the club. The girl who designed him, Phoebe Clark-Tate, who's 11, she wrote on her form that she wanted Ash to be an eco-friendly mascot as well. So he's going to be planting a few trees. He's going to be doing some litter picks. He's going to be trying to get involved in all of that sort of community activity as well.
And I imagine Phoebe's something of a celebrity as well.
Yes, she really is, actually. And she came along a few days after winning the competition. We held a big girls tournament for year 5 and 6 pupils. And Phoebe, who is not that much of a football fan, came along and played. And it really wasn't her thing because Ash the Tree was there cheering her on. She came and joined in, which was great.
And that's, again, one of those added benefits. You know, it's non-league football isn't about football. That's what I always try and tell people. It's about the community. It's about the people that you meet. It's about the things you learn. I mean, the fact you know, I've careered off the road. I've had so many different jobs and whatever. But to be someone that makes mascot costumes, now that's something I wish I'd known about now when I was filling in my careers form when I was at school.
Oh, absolutely. This lady, Sally Preezick, she's made the Pontypines in the Night Garden. She's made all sorts of CBeebies characters, all sorts of ones for like reality TV programmes. When you look on her website, you say, oh, wow. And then there's Ash the Tree. I think it's one of the only competitions she's taken part in. And she made a wonderful mini Ash the Tree that ended up being the prize that we gave to Phoebe as well, which was really good.
And you know, in the past on this show, we've spoken to a few mascots, mainly that they've been the ones that have competed and at various race courses up and down the country in mascot races and that. But I guess we've never really analysed the pros and cons of mascots. I think you're something of an expert in this field. Now, am I right in thinking that non-league fans may have already met you, maybe as Spitty the dog of Newport County?
They may well have met me as Spitty the Dog. I used to work as a journalist on the local paper in Newport, and the person who'd been Spitty the Dog for a number of years had retired. I think his family had said, come on, you've been Spitty the Dog for enough time now. So I stepped in and did a feature on it for the paper and had a couple of games of Spitty the Dog. And I have to say, I got in the costume, and it was the first game I did. It was August. It was a friendly, pre-season friendly, and it was boiling hot. And the thing is, you come out and you can't just stand still when you're the mascot. You're constantly in character and you've got all the children coming up to you. And I burst into this dance routine to Alicia Dixon. Does he wash up? He never washes up. And then suddenly the fans are all on their feet and you think, oh, no, I've got to keep going now for like the whole 3 minutes of the song. And I think there's a film of it somewhere. And it was great when I was doing it, but I remember just dripping in sweat and just coming in at the end. And then they stopped everyone in the bar when the match had finished, and they brought me in and said, can anyone guess who this, I was about 22 years old, who this girl was today? And no one could guess, and said, this was Spitty the Dog, and no one could believe it.
And looking back to some of my visits to Spitty Park in Newport over the years with Hazen Yedin, I mean, it could get fairly volatile there as well. Dressing up in a large dog outfit was probably fairly one of the bravest things you've ever done, and probably attracted a fair bit of stick. But have perceptions changed over the years in regards of mascots?
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's all about what you make of it. It's all about the amount of fun you want to have. And social media is great for that these days. I mean, Mighty Red, the Liverpool mascot, had a bit of banter with Ash the Tree on Instagram last week. And it's just nice that, you know, you can think of something funny for Ash the Tree to be doing that day that is related or not related to the football. And just, you know, all the time, it's just building up his character, engaging local people. And the main thing is just to hopefully get more fans coming to the club and tell more people about the joys of non-league football. That's the whole aim of it.
Yeah, as an awareness tool, it does look like it's already doing its job. But I mean, I guess the big question is has Ash the Tree managed to get a smile out of Tommy Warrilow yet?
He has, actually, yes. He got Hello Darling as Tommy Warrilow walked off to the bench. So yes, he has got a smile from him.
Well, I think I've tried for years to try and get a smile out of Tommy Warrilow. And he's a great manager that knows all the different elements of building a football club. And that's one of the things that you're doing down at the football club, isn't it? It's a bit of fun, but in terms of marketing for a non-league club, it's also very good business.
Yes, absolutely. I think we've just brought a new sponsor on board, and they're a local bus company, and already I've been talking to them about, let's get Ash the Tree to come on a bus and we'll do some pictures and meet some of the people getting on the bus. And it just adds a bit, it's something visual, it's something quite fun, and it opens up what you can do as a club. And we're hoping to get him involved in, there's the big mascot race, which takes place in Wetherby every year. So at some point, Ash the Tree will be doing that. And I've actually run the London Marathon in a flamingo costume before. So having worn Ash the Tree, I'm not sure I'll be breaking the 4-hour barrier. But who knows? Ash the Tree may well do the London Marathon at some point.
Well, that's certainly something that we'll be looking out for. And I recall my own twins once being reduced to tears as toddlers going into Eastbourne Borough. And I think it was the 8-foot Ollie the Owl back then. I think Sammy the Sunshine's taken over down at Eastbourne since. But I mean, is there a technique or an insider's guide to being a mascot so that you're more loved than feared?
I think it's being cheeky. So it's seeing a situation and thinking, can I go and tap that person on the back? Or, you know, how far can I push this without annoying people? It's having a really big repertoire of dance moves, because you can't run out. You've got to have lots of different things to do. And it's spotting who wants to engage with you. You haven't always got the best vision, because you've obviously only got like the eyes or the mouth or something to look out. So you've got to be really aware of who's around you. Don't knock any small children over. Make sure you don't get beer spilt on the costume, because it costs a lot of money and it's not easy to clean. And yeah, I think just being in character and being fun and just enjoying it. If you enjoy it, everyone else is going to enjoy it. And like, no one can not wave and say hello to Ash the Tree. He's got a lovely big smile, big engaging eyes. He makes everyone smile.
Yeah. And yeah, I said it's part of your engagement and try and bring everybody together under the Ashford United banner. Lots going on off the field. The new Supporters Association recently had its first meeting as well.
Yes. We've just newly launched, I think because of the pandemic, a lot of things like that slowed down. So just relaunched the Supporters Association, got big plans for non-league day, lots of activities going on in the background, face painting, extra entertainment, local choirs, dance groups coming to perform. Yeah, just to make it a really big day and hopefully draw in those people that have thought about going to football before, not giving it a try, but might come and then hopefully come back. One of the things I help run is the child mascots. And that's great, because we get loads of people who've never been to the club before, but the children come in, get to go in the changing rooms and meet the players for autographs, get to walk out with the team, join in the warm up. And that's really special for both the parents and the children as well. And we're also doing a scheme at the moment where community groups and charities can apply for their group to come along for free to one of our matches. And we write a feature about them in the programme, put a bit about them on the website, and they get to come in and enjoy a free day out. And hopefully they'll come back as well. We've got a centre just down the road from the stadium that's for unaccompanied asylum seeker children who've just come into the country. And while they're there, they're being interviewed about their journey. And a lot of them haven't seen any of England before, but they come in on the coach and they all come and get dropped off and they come in and enjoy a match for free. And sort of seeing their faces that they've, you know, they've heard about English football on TV and suddenly they're here in the stadium and that's it.
The universal language of football. And of course, yeah, great business going on off the field then with the, you know, various initiatives. But on the field, Ashford currently fourth with a game in hand. Could Ash the Tree be the missing piece of the jigsaw for that promotion push?
He could be. Yeah, results up till Christmas were really good and we were on and off the top of the table. And then Hastings have had a really good run. And I think there's only about 5 points now separating second and sixth. So there's one of those teams in the mix with us that aren't going to make the playoffs. So who knows? Hastings are only 6 points clear at the top and anything can happen. There's quite a few games left. But hopefully having Ash there, and Ash is going to go on the road as well, hopefully, to some of the away games and hopefully the playoffs. It would be amazing. That's all the excitement at the end of the season, isn't it? Trying to build up to where that final positioning is going to be.
Yeah, and it's great to hear that you're engaging the next generation of non-league footballers and non-league fans. And, you know, I'm still worried that sometimes I'm the oldest one that ever goes into a boardroom across non-league. And, yeah, we need to get new people along. And the fact that, you know, as a 22-year-old, you were dressed up in a mascot costume down in non-league and you're still involved is a great story as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I always wanted to work in football and actually just went through cancer just before the pandemic. And that was I'd always worked in news journalism. And I thought, no, I've always wanted to work in football. If I get through this and get better, that's what I'm going to go and do. And now here I am, living the dream, working in non-league football.
It is the dream. And it's brilliant to get you on as well, Faye. And great to have you involved in non-league football. Just remind everybody where they can, you know, maybe follow Ash the Tree and everything he's about to get up to.
Yeah, he's Ash the Tree, AUFC, on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. And he is, as far as we know, the only tree in English football who's a mascot. There is a university in America, Stanford University, who have a tree as their mascot, but they're the only people I've found from a lot of Googling that have a tree. So we could well be one of the only tree mascots in the world.
And from what's small acorns grow huge trees. Well, maybe not ash trees, but certainly he'll be branching out, I'm sure. Faye Hackwell from Ashford United, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks for having me on.
So rounding off this week's news, it's time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. And it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Editor at large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's a pleasure to get you on. And I guess let's start as we so often do with a managerial merry-go-round. It doesn't seem as busy. I don't know whether people have run out of tokens or that, but Merthyr Town struggling in the Southern Premier South. They were busy before the transfer deadline closed in Wales, which we spoke about. You know that affecting the Welsh clubs, but it hasn't really made much of a difference. And Dean Clark has been relieved of his duties there. His assistant Steve Williams and midfielder Matty Harris are taking interim charge there. I'm not sure that those. I understand someone's got to take over, and they're probably not going to avoid relegation. But I'm not sure those sort of changes ever really make a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really difficult season for the club at the moment. He's coming off the back of a difficult time as well. Obviously, they set out the season, didn't they, because of COVID, and I guess it's just sort of frustrating for everybody that the results wouldn't have gone as well as they would have liked. And Dean Clark, as you said, put a lot of effort and time in, and sometimes it just doesn't quite happen, and it's been a tough period for the club. And of course, they're hoping that they can something can happen. It's sort of looking for sometimes only just a spark at this stage of the season. So they're quite a little way off at the moment, and Wimborne sort of adrift a little bit really. But it's kind of like do or die now that they've won two games all season. That sort of shows what kind of a year it's been, I guess.
Yeah, and I think my club, we had a good result against them. But you look at the goals that they've conceded, 69 goals in 30 games. It probably shows how tight all these divisions are. That they're a club that you're saying beginning to get cast adrift there at the bottom. But there's not too many hammerings, or if there are hammerings, they're across the field. You know, clubs are beating the other clubs against the form guide and against the table positions.
It's normally Hayes and Yedding dishing out hammerings in that division, like so, isn't it? You scored 75 goals this season. Not bad in 30 games.
It's not bad. I mean, there's been plenty of goals gone in. I'd like to think that we're not going to get to the stage of a season where clubs are conceding 100 goals in the season. And I guess that's where a new manager maybe able to get something out of the lads that are there and say, look, they're obviously fairly close in most of these games, and it's just that extra tweak, these small margins that managers always talk about, and that may make a differential and just at least put them in a positive mindset going into the next season.
Yeah, exactly. I think they say there's been some young players that have gone down that route this year, and they sort of brought some players in recently as well, which kind of haven't quite helped tip the balance the other way, so... I think it was one of those always going to be a difficult task starting again from the very beginning after sitting the year out because of the COVID restrictions. I mean, it's such a proud club, proud name, and there's a few issues a few years ago. I managed to get through it, and then with Gavin Williams. And, it's sort of one of those maybe see how they can get on, and maybe they are starting to look ahead to the new season and kind of trying to bounce back and come again and see how that, see if they can sort of build up a stronger base.
Yeah, and talking of old names, proud clubs and that sort of thing, an old face has returned to Mangotsfield United this week. Phil Bate back in situ as the manager there. We talk so often about young managers coming through, and I'm sure Phil won't mind me saying he's one of the more experienced kind. He's someone that I probably interviewed many years ago. I think he's 66 years old now. The two previous spells as caretaker boss at Bristol Rovers, so plenty of experience. But that experience also includes the glory years at Mangotsfield when he was in charge 2009 to 2012. When I remember, I did lots of reporting about the club making the FA Cup fourth qualifying round and the Southern League Division 1 playoffs at the time. So nice to see his return and hope still there for some of us of more mature years.
It sort of feels like a bit of a young man's game now, doesn't it, management? A lot of clubs kind of looking to go that route, and it's obviously a trend you kind of see in the Football League as well, but still a place for that experience, and that experience with their sort of situation there at the moment, obviously struggling down at the foot of the table, the Southern Division 1 South. So that sort of experience and that calmness that you know, that level of knowledge can bring them. Hopefully, they'll be hoping they can push them up the table. You know, not sort of particularly far off. It's only a few points, and it's really quite tight down there. So, they're hoping that kind of gets that reaction. And like I say, there's still a place for the experienced managers. And I was talking to Russ Penn recently about the obviously with Kidderminster. He was sort of joke with older players when they go into management. You go from being an old player into a young manager, and Russ is obviously one of those now. So. He's a young manager, but he was talking kind of about the influences and the people that he kind of looks to, and he was talking about some of the experienced managers who've been in the game at the top levels for such a long time. People like Warner, Steve Bruce, and Sam Allardyce saying, you know, there's a reason people sort of cast them aside as dinosaurs and things, and you know, there's a reason why those people have been involved in the game for so long. And you know, it's the same in non-league, as people have been in the game for many, many years and given their lives to it, and you know, they're still.
Yeah,
still valued as well, so it's good to see.
Yeah, and we spoke to Hakan Hayrettin at Maidstone earlier on in the show, and it was interesting that some of the points that he's made that he's matured as a manager, matured as a person, and sort of, you know, maybe doesn't get as wound up as he used to, and it you know, and he's got, you know, clearly the success that he's having at Maidstone this year, he's still got plenty to give, and I'd still count him in one of those younger managers as well.
Well, this is the thing with Hack. Yeah, he sort of almost kind of probably people don't really. He sort of can almost forget how much kind of experience he's had. You know, as a player, and you know, at Wickham, he's playing with Martin O'Neill and his trophy and all that kind of thing. And he's gone into management. He had years at at Grays, wasn't he? Mm. And obviously Thurrock before that, where he had a long spell. John Steele's management team at Luton when they won promotion, you know, he's kind of seen it all really in his time back, and you know, just 52, just got over the 50 marks, but going incredibly well at Maidstone. I spoke to him just before Christmas, and you know, they were going ticking along nicely then, and they got through a little bit of a rough patch and were right back up there. And you know, that sort of experience and kind of what he's doing at Maidstone, and you know, sort of big job there, and you know, big expectation, big crowd. And if you saw any of the BT Sport Gaffers documentary that they did, and Maidstone were featured on there when they were sort of struggling at the bottom of the National League when Hack went in with John Steele, and that was a real rebuild job, and it kind of changed the whole squad and the club around really. And Hackan's, you know, right in the thick of an interesting National League South title race. And Dorking a couple of weeks ago looked like about a streak away of it, and now it's down to at least 3 points on Maidstone, and Maidstone have got a game in hand. So Dartford have got a game in hand on Dorking, and Oxford above them as well, not too far back. So really fascinating division at the moment.
Mm. And you know, it just shows that the strength of non-league at the moment. And there was one other big managerial move, a managerial shock, I think it's fair to say. Andy Peakes, he's chosen to depart from AFC Rushden and Diamonds. Where I think he's been there since May 2012 on the coaching staff and as the gaffer, since March 2014. Rushden and Diamonds, currently in the playoffs in the Southern League Premier Central, but he's decided to leave and take over at Tamworth, who are currently battling relegation in the same division. It's an 18-month contract, I understand, and I guess he sees greater potential if they can stay up this season.
Yeah, I think it's when that news came out the other night, one just kind of stopped in your tracks. That's a big change. And as you say, he's been there a long time. He was with Mark Starmer before at the beginning of the club when they came up the leagues after their rebirth from everything that happened with Rushden and Diamonds. So I guess, you know, the fact how much he's done there, how much he's been, you know, how long he's been there for, and what he's kind of been part of, would have made this a very, very difficult decision. And yes, it kind of shows, you know, the lure of Tamworth and what a name they are as well. You know, we're having a really, really tough season, kind of, you know, one that would have been expecting to be pushing for promotion. And as we've talked now, they're 18th in the table, 5 points above the relegation line. So that does show how hard it's been there this season. Obviously, a club not that long ago were in the National League and kind of fallen down, and that sort of shows their potential, that they can kind of get back there. And I guess that sometimes you have to look at that big long term picture. And I guess that he'll be feeling that he's taken AFC Russian and Diamonds as far as he can. Tamworth is too good an opportunity to turn down. But yeah, I imagine a very difficult decision. Whoever comes in at Russian and Diamonds will be taking over, you know, getting that rare opportunity as a manager to take over a squad that's flying high and right in the thick of a promotion race. So interesting move, and it'll be fascinating to kind of see how the rest of the season plays out for both sides.
Mm. Well, and talking of promotion races, obviously another big weekend in the National League. Second place Chesterfield against sixth place Solihull Moors, I guess probably the big game. But we got Friday night football as well, Southend Grimsby as well, just as a little precursor to that. And I mean, every week we talk about the top of the National League there, and I think every week I have my own different views on it. It seems to be moving. It seems to be shifting. And there's something at the back of my mind thinking one of these clubs that are just outside the playoffs could possibly be the one that sneaks in and then maybe grabs the playoff final win.
Yeah, and kind of name on everyone's lips at the moment is Southend, as you say. I mean, the turnaround's kind of been remarkable. I mean, you go from not that long ago, you know, looking across social media, and it was real doom and gloom and frustration. And are they going to go down again? Kind of sort of saying, you know, are they going to slip right through? And it just all felt like a really sort of bleak situation. And, you know, people saying, I'm struggling to adapt to life in non-league and everything that comes with it, and kind of what a big scout they are for people. But recent weeks, Kevin Mayer's going in there. Obviously, John Steele's kind of gone in behind the scenes as well. Mark Bentley went with when Kevin went in with from Canby and his experience, and then Darren Curran, his experience of the National League. And they, you know, some good signings that they've made have kind of gone down that sort of different route. You can see kind of where John Steele's, you know, where he's made success in the past, going down and finding players from lower down. And they've had Anwar Udin's kind of been there, sort of helping them with that sort of side of stuff as well. And we've signed Callum Powell from Kettering, who's ripping it up in the National League law. Harry Cardwell from Chorley, who's such an important player for them. And, you know, really, Noor Hussein's gone from Dartford, and, you know, what talent he is. And obviously he's played at that level, but come down and got his chance again to go into full-time football. So they really turned it around, and they've kind of not so much going under the radar, really, because when I think they're sort of 10 games unbeaten, when you go on kind of a run like that, it's difficult to go under the radar. But they've kind of really shot up the division. Still a little way outside it, but it's just kind of that form that they're in. They're now 8 points as we speak now. There's some games, teams above them have got games in hand, but whether they make it or not is kind of probably, they're kind of looking really, it's feeling a lot better around the club. And if they don't make it, then it's almost a bit like Leighton Orient a few years ago when they first came down that season, sort of struggled to get their feet a little bit, but finished the season well. And then the next year, with hopes of promotion, obviously they went and won the league. But you know, sometimes you have to look at that bigger, wider picture. But at the moment, that's not going to be anyone's thoughts there. They're going to be thinking about getting in there. I mean, it's been the same for Torquay. Difficult, really difficult start to the season, stuttering and kind of a bit inconsistent. For the knock on from last year's playoff final, which was so late, which, you know, they lost on a penalty shootout to Hartlepool, and that game goes either way. But such a late game in the year. It was in June that the game was played, and didn't really give them Gary Johnson much time. A few players went out, and some of their big players moved on, and they had to kind of, you know, rebuild a little bit and come again. But they've really been in a good run of form recently as well, and they've sort of pushed themselves right up there. And that just shows how wide open this table, this division is. You say Southend welcoming Grimsby on Friday night, and Grimsby not that long ago were feeling great about life, and they were going well and started well in the having come down. Obviously, they came down together, didn't they, from League Two? But at the moment, they've sort of slipped down a little bit. So it's a fascinating run in, and Chesterfield, Solihull on Saturday, as you say. I mean, Chesterfield, huge blow with the, you know, awful injury to Kaby Shimanya. It's such a, you know, it's horrible to see, really. You know, I had an operation yesterday, and it looks to me to be out for quite a while. And it's such a shame to see a player who's really, you know, red hot form and scored 25 goals in all competitions this season, 24 in the National League. You know, could have probably got a move in January, but you know, didn't happen. But you know, looking in the summer, if Chesterfield didn't get up, or if they do, could easily be playing Championship, you know, starting in the Championship team next season. And such a cruel injury to end his season. And that's a real blow for Chesterfield, because he's so important for their goals. As you, Paul Cook coming in now, it's kind of something our columnist and BT Sport expert Adam Virgo was kind of hinting that before the news of the Chimanga injury, that kind of they needed to try and get some more goals from elsewhere around the pitch to kind of help and lighten that load on Chimanga, and now that comes along. It's a real blow, and really sort of, you know, not what you want to see them sort of run into the scene and all the big guns out there firing, and such a shame. And I'm sure he'll come back stronger, but a difficult situation for all there, really.
Yeah, and personally for him, hopefully the injury's not as bad as it maybe could have been, and hopefully he can be back as quickly as possible. But as you say, it will be a lengthy layoff. And at the top of the National League, Stockport are currently in that position. They'll be looking ahead to their game this weekend at home to Woking. But at the start of the week, we had the FA Trophy and FA Vars draws, and having beaten Bolton and lost away at Rotherham in the FA Cup this season, Stockport County have quite possibly got the toughest game of their competition year, with a trip to Needham Market in the quarterfinals of the trophy next month.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic draw for Needham. I was speaking to Luke Ingram today, who scored the penalty that sent them through against Dartford, and going to get kind of funny one, you know, they would never have expected to be getting to the quarterfinals. I mean, we were talked about it. It's kind of one of those runs that's just happened, as does happen every year for one or two clubs. And you know, they've already beaten Wealdstone and then went down to Yeovil and won them on penalties. Needham, and they beat Dartford, who are, you know, going great guns in the National League South. And now a huge game of Stockport County coming to Suffolk to take them on in the quarterfinals. And yeah, it would be a boost definitely on the other foot, isn't it, from that incredible game against Bolton early in the season in the FA Cup when Dave Challenger's men came back and came from behind. Got a really difficult start in that game. I think 2-0 down after a few minutes, weren't they?
Yeah.
Came back and won it, and you know, this would be a completely different test. And obviously Needham, managed by Kevin Horlock, who's been around and successful professional career and doing really well at the club. They're getting a lot of academy players through and into the first team, and one on trial at Aston Villa at the moment, and a lad went to Brentford the other week as well. So you know, really good things happening at the club, and they'll really relishing that day. Obviously, it's all the headaches that comes with having a big game like that. I'm sure probably some way they preferred it to be away and we going to Stockport and Notts County. But yeah, so fantastic draw for the club, and you know, really good to see the sort of spotlight again onto Needham for all the work they've been doing down there off the pitch in the last few years.
And talking of headaches for those who are organising games, I mean, there's no hiding the fact that these are national competitions. I do feel for those planning the FA Vars trip to Littlehampton Town from North Shields. That I can't imagine there's direct transport connections, so that's a long day out on a coach.
No, well, one of our freelancers does a lot of stuff for us, Mark Carruthers, and he sent a message and said, "Oh, what's the quickest way to Littlehampton?" I said, "I think you probably go to France, fly to France, and then swim back might be quicker than coming down there." Yeah, that is definitely an overnight stay, if ever there was one. But you know, this is, you know, obviously North Shields have been there before and they've won the before, and they're kind of fancied now, and you get to this stage and it's, you know, you can't help it. Sort of feels like it's really serious now. You get to the quarters, and it kind of opens out. People can see, you know, who's who, and you have that chance now. And if you're going to get to Wembley, these are the trips you've got to go for. And it's kind of nice to be having them again, isn't it? After all the, you always say, you know, COVID and the regionalised draws and all that sort of stuff. And it's nice to have these these games, and what an adventure for those players to be going down there. It's Littlehampton, just be glad there's no replays.
Yeah, there's an adventure for players, for fans, and everybody. And so, plenty going on, even in a fairly quiet week for non-league football. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Well, yeah, as you say, a lot of heavy emphasis on the Trojan advisor, suspect looking room and Pigeon North Shields, and you've got a good column coming from yourself as well. So, interested to, I know you're busy typing away as we speak, aren't you? So on that, so
it's actually open on my other. Yeah, this is. I'm showing off. I'm dual screening here. I've actually got it open. It's been one of those days where I need to be able to read it through one more time to make sure it makes sense, and then. So when I get all the social media abuse on Sunday and say it doesn't make sense, then you can understand that I probably didn't have the 10 minutes I needed to read through it. But
steer clear of social media. Steer clear of social media on Sunday, like I do. Not the place you want to be. lots going on, and obviously all the games, and it's kind of nice to have a normal week off, having all the trophy and the bar stuff on top of everything. Last week it felt like a really busy one, so hoping that some games go ahead. I mean, anxiously looking at the weather forecast and hearing the wind and the rain hammering away outside. I think we could see a few games go this weekend, but hopefully we have a decent program. There'll be plenty to read in there on Sunday,
and hopefully all the ground staying intact as well. I guess. We should also mention that the departure of David Richardson to Pastures New has been invaluable to the show. We didn't get a chance to mention last week. He's very quiet. He's very, you know what he's like. He's moved into the wider world of sport, and I'm sure we'll all stay in contact with him. But it'll be a great loss to the show, and I guess to the paper as well.
I've already deleted his number. I've unfollowed him on Twitter. I've deleted his number. I've unfollowed him on Instagram. I'm friending him on Facebook. Yes, sad to see David go. He's been brilliant for us last. He's been working here 4 years. It feels like longer than that.
That seems like
more reflection on there.
On the times we've lived through.
How it's been. But he's just been brilliant. I said to him the other day, it's kind of obvious that he was always going to kind of move on. He's been, he loves his non-league, and his knowledge is fantastic, and he's done a lot of good stuff. And he's only a young boy, so someone's going to notice eventually. Pleased for him to be getting a new opportunity. And I know we're going to smash that as well. But yeah, a shame to lose him. I think maybe. Having to drive with me all the way to Bristol last year for the National League promotion final. Maybe I thought that went quite well. I thought he enjoyed it. I thought he'd want to do it again this year, but maybe not. But yeah, real blow for us, but really pleased for him. And no doubt he'll still be around, and he'll still be out watching non-league games to know how much he loves this level of the game.
Yeah, I think I might need to get him on as a personal tutor to myself just to keep my non-league knowledge up. You say, he knows non-league game inside and out, but I'm sure he'll be back in some form, way or other, even if that's a few years ahead. Well, Matt, thank you as ever for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We look forward to reading this weekend's paper, and hopefully not seeing it blow down the road as we collect it from the news agents. But have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim, and you speak soon.
And that's it for this week. Thank you once again for everybody listening. Thank you for all your kind comments that we get via social media and other various platforms and that over the week. It is great to know that everybody's listening and why they're listening and why they love the show. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. And I'm there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. You can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, GeoSavin, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe. Hopefully the weather will mean that you're able to enjoy a game of football there this weekend. Certainly enjoy that game of football. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A, J-A-B-B-A. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.